Blog Talk Radio.
I am Kelly Wells, and you can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. If you're listening live, sorry you missed my opening rant because I was muted. But listen afterwards because I'm just flabbergasted. Like, this is all the stuff they say about Vince McMahon. A lot of it's overblown. And a lot of it's just fun. I mean, he's crazy, but a lot of it is overblown. But something like this happens, and you have to say, why? Like, what's the purpose of sabotaging your own? We're going to go to those emails. So the main event, we're going to go to the emails in a second. The main event segment, Samoa Joe going to the ring, demanding that he see Karrion Kross there, and in what was likely a pre-taped segment because Kross is not in state yet. Who knows? Karrion Kross pulls up outside and shows that he has beaten down. This is to further the feud going with Samoa Joe. This is one of the only feuds really going right now because we're just kind of getting building blocks in place for other stuff. And this feud is so effective from an unbeatable monster context. And it's so ripe for Joe to be the one to end this. But as we know, he wasn't. Like, somebody beat him. Somebody beat Karrion Kross already. Okay, so Tom, let's hear from you, and let's go to a few emails.
I am at Tom Stout on Twitter, and I can tell you that the Dallas to Orlando drive is really actually not that bad. It feels breezy because when you start hitting, like, you know, Louisiana, Georgia, whatever, like that rapid succession of the northern Gulf states, it's just state line after state line after state line, and it feels like you're going faster than you are. It's only once you hit the panhandle that it starts to drag. But boy, I sure am ready to do a deep dive on the upside of Nikki A.S.H. Oh wait, wrong show. So that was my pre-scripted joke that I wrote for myself. The other pre-scripted joke I wrote for myself was, this is a terrible episode of NXT because there's no Zoe Stark. It actually was, I thought, a pretty darn good episode of NXT, but I guess I'm ready to provide the counterpoint of indifference to the Karrion Kross situation, to everybody else's furor over it, which is understandable. But yeah, I guess, what did you think of the closing angle here?
I mean, mine's just shock, really. Like, I can't even call it furor. It's just disbelief. I don't understand why Vince does this, I guess. Even though I've never said that I like Kross, because I really
right.
don't.
I think he's more of, it's like nobody, I can't think of a single person who has told us that they are a fan of Karrion Kross. It's more that it's an extreme example of how NXT can prepare someone for the main roster, and then the main roster can, and Vince can seem to fail them right out of the gates as if none of that prep mattered.
Yeah. I mean, even if it is a breezy drive from Dallas to Orlando, you can't have Karrion Kross in the arena. You can't have him go to the ring, because then they start chanting, "You got beat." Like, you can't have him there because you're trying not to. I mean, they aggressively ignored the fact, like, they mentioned that he was on Raw, but they aggressively ignored the fact that he had and lost a match. Like, it does not benefit them to verify that he lost a match to a lower mid-carder. But that
you can
is...
tell I haven't made that drive in a while because I pull up an actual map and it's Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and then Panhandle. You don't even have to touch Georgia, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go to some emails. This is from Jack Argyle. Hey, guys, nice to email you into you this week, albeit a bit before the show. I've emailed in before to express my dissatisfaction with Cross as champion, but after seeing his unbeaten run end on Raw, I now don't feel excited at all for Joe getting his revenge this week on Cross. Last week when Cross attacked Joe after the match, I was shocked and couldn't wait for the show this week to see Joe's revenge. Now I feel bad for Joe not getting his big match against a top undefeated champion. I know this is before the show, but has it affected your guys' enjoyment for this upcoming program? Thanks, guys. Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. I don't know that it affected my enjoyment, and like, it certainly changed my what I was looking forward to, because I was looking forward to, I guess I was looking forward to see how, what they would do, but then it got to the point, well, how are they going to spin this? Which almost in a car crash sort of way made me more excited because they literally have to do damage control because of how their main star was booked on Raw. That is how I felt. Yeah, it's, this seems like it would have been the Joe revenge week, but you couldn't, because Karrion Kross needed to get something back after last night. Okay, Tim Scott emails us. Actually, I don't know if it's Tim Scott. T. Scott. Hey, guys, I've just been sitting here in my home office seething about this all morning, and I realized that I had to write into your show to get your take. Basically, what I want to know is, since evidently Charlotte's NXT women's title wins are no longer canon, and Karrion Kross couldn't even defeat Jeff Hardy in his Raw debut, am I crazy for thinking that Vince is actively trying to bury NXT? And don't even get me started on what they did to Keith Lee. Like, seriously, what the hell is going on? Hashtag the end is here. Tim Scott. Oh, okay, I was right the first time. VIP member from Virginia. I thought it was Tim Scott, but he just goes T. Scott on Twitter, and we talk a lot. P.S. Love your show, guys. Still listen every week. Your insight, chemistry, and analysis is absolutely second to none. Thank you, and enjoy your summer. Don't forget, huh? Okay, C.F. Falvey emails us. Evening, gents. Do you think Joe's bad mood at the start of the show was because he got choked out last week, or because he used up a ton of his badass equity last week so that Kross could get punked out in 2 minutes last night on Raw? I honestly didn't want to watch tonight, as I'm still angry about it. They have built Kross up as an undefeated monster, beating most of their top guys, have him choke out Joe on NXT, and they do that on Raw? I'm not even a fan of Kross, but it's probably the most incompetent booking I've ever seen in a long time. A program that probably got me more excited than anything since Gargano Ciampa, mainly because of Joe's return, feels so badly diminished already, and it's the fault of a separate incompetent promotion. It almost felt like the sabotage of NXT last night. One of their most recent champions in Keith Lee comes out as a surprise when everyone is expecting Goldberg and gets beaten in 5 minutes. Then send Rhea out when the fans are chanting for Becky, and there's nothing like following up a strong showing at Money in the Bank by Ricochet by having him in a dark match. Maybe on Friday they could call up the Undisputed Era, putting them back together without explanation, and have them squashed by the remaining members of Retribution. Chris from Milwaukee. P.S. On a more positive note, I saved up about 9 episodes of 8YB during the Peacock blackout and have spent the last 2 days catching up. Surprisingly, after 6 hours of listening to Tom and Kelly, I'm not quite sick of your voices yet. There's got to be a compliment in there somewhere. Well, I'll tell you what. The upside of all this ranting about what happened to Karrion Kross is, Tom, we're getting a lot of praise in these emails.
The nicest compliments we've ever gotten in our almost 4 years of doing this.
Great stuff, guys. And I'm filled with mirth. I don't know why mirth. I guess it's the Christmas, the Christmas season. I don't know. It's just so bizarre what's happened. So I'm a weird guy, and this is making me weirder. I don't know how further this down, or if I need to add anything to it, or if even there is anything to add, because everybody saw it. Everybody's mystified. And, like, on Twitter, the prevailing feeling was everybody was like, I don't even like Kross in this hat, and I feel this way. It's amazing that they got everyone to invest in somebody they just really don't even like. Then I'm like, why would you do this? It's a stunner. Tom, what do you got?
Yeah, I think it's, I really think it's more that he just represents the NXT call-up right now. He's a very, very prominent example of it, and he's someone that, like Aleister Black before him perhaps, really seemed like ready-made. Like, you did not have to change Aleister Black. And we, you know, we could say this about however many call-ups. I'm going to try as I go along here not to go down other individual rabbit holes as we are wont to do, especially when the names like Bailey and Tyler Breeze come up. But you didn't have to change Aleister Black. You could have just done exactly what was happening on NXT, and it was ready-made to get over on the main roster. And Cross seemed the same way. So if stuff is going to be stripped away from him, this guy that just seems like, you know, if you were a couple inches taller, he would be a Vince McMahon wet dream. Then what does that mean for other call-ups, especially the inconvenient timing of seeing Keith Lee finally return just to eat another pin, to be a jobber to the stars kind of situation. And of course, this is one of those situations where there's a lot. So hopefully I have some semblance of order as I approach it here, but I will just say that, for what they presented on the show tonight, I thought it was very effective bookending. Joe saying that he guaranteed somebody was going to get put to sleep, and I don't know how many times you want somebody guaranteeing something that isn't going to get delivered, because he said it was going to happen tonight. But it made me want to see what was going to happen, and the fact that Regal got laid out and Cross still got away, while making it seem like the authority of Regal and Joe doesn't rule him anymore, and probably he feels like it never did. I felt like that was a very effective deepening of the feud, and I really felt Joe's seething anger in wanting to get his hands on Cross, so I am that much more excited to see this now. And I really don't feel like it's NXT's business to worry about what happened on Raw. They gave it a couple of cursory mentions, and if you're going back through the archives and watching this, just NXT by itself in order, you're not even really going to notice. They mention Raw specifically, but they don't mention what happened there. And I forget exactly what Joe said about it, but then Cross said, like, this title means I can go wherever I want. They don't need to specifically say anything. It doesn't benefit them in any way. Cross's story is winding to an end in NXT. It is beginning on the main roster, and we've been shown repeatedly over the years that more often than not, those continuities really don't cross, even though it would be more respectful to the fans, the wrestlers, and to the potential of the brands to make them do so. And that, you know, the one email pointed out, I think it was from Tim, that pointed out the acknowledgement of Charlotte's 12 titles as opposed to 14. It's just like, it's defeatist because, yes, it would be better if they acknowledged them. But after this long, I've just come to understand that that's how they're doing it. And, yeah, I would prefer that Charlotte's titles got acknowledged. I would prefer if there was greater continuity, more of that handshake, as I've been calling it, between NXT and the main roster. But it's just not there. So I can't get too up in arms when, A, Karrion Kross, of all people, is not getting what appears to be the greatest call-up, and B, we've only seen one match. I don't know if anybody really wants to hear that right now after it took him, less than 2 minutes to get beat by Jeff Hardy with Jeff Hardy's feet up on the ropes, but this story is just starting. If there's anything to be said about, it's the fact that he was given a post-match promo, and all he really said was his catchphrase, which in this context is totally arbitrary and means nothing. This is the start of something, not the full picture of it. And yes, it may demonstrate something that Vince wanted to call this guy up and not just make him dominant right out of the gate. Meanwhile, I'm kind of like, well, good. We're not going to have to deal with an undefeated streak storyline. And on the other hand, you know, as other people have speculated, maybe it was a test of sorts, just to see how he was going to handle that kind of booking. As for Keith Lee, This is the exact, like, to the letter, this is the exact same thing they were doing with him previously when they, at the time, also didn't know what to do with Keith Lee. So it's not that much of a shock. Meanwhile, those aren't the only two recent NXT champions that returned to the main roster or debuted or re-debuted or however you want to phrase it. On Friday, Balor showed up, and he seems fine. So it's not across the board. And yes, NXT is arguably a very different component of the company now than it was when, say, Kevin Owens was going up with the title and challenging John Cena. But we do have to look at people like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Charlotte and Nikki Ash and, you know, pick almost throw a dartboard at the main roster right now. And it's probably going to land on somebody who has been through the NXT system. That's just how it is now. And we can argue individually, like with our Baileys and our Tyler Breeze, that the path could have been easier for them. But I really have trouble getting up in arms about just one night that was the very beginning of Karrion Kross's story. And I feel like NXT, for their part, approached things very well tonight because they got me more excited for this particular program while also paying the main roster just as much mind as the main roster paid them. It's all fine to me.
Yeah. First of all, I know it's what it is now. But can we just not say Nikki Ash? I just don't want to.
Hey, if you want to have that conversation, I actually have a lot of really positive things to say about that direction. I am very high on that, on what she's doing right now.
I'm very high on what she's doing. I just think that Nikki Ash sounds really dopey. Yeah,
you're
it's
not
literally
wrong. You're not wrong.
Just the name. That's my only issue with it. I actually love what she's doing. And I love that she did it. Her.
In a meta sense, not only is the character kind of meta of a wrestler, like she didn't change characters. She's still the same person, but she has adopted a fake gimmick, to help boost her to represent her own vivacious morale. And it's working. Like, wearing that on her sleeve is working. And where did I start with that? I'm just enthusiastic about Nikki Ash, even though, yeah, the name is kind of goofy. Oh, right. The meta sense that we know that she also was the one who created it. That's become that, tidbit of info has become a, almost essential part of the analysis of her presentation.
She's on her third last name, folks, because she went from Glenn Cross to Cross. And now she's Ash. So we're off the rails earlier than usual. Because, I know that this is early in their situation. I thought of the test thing, too. I think that's stupid. I think it's a stupid way to approach your business and a silly thing to, like, publicly make a mockery of somebody to see how they'll respond. And if you did that in real business, it would be absolutely ridiculous. I have definitely tried to say also to myself, this is just the first part of a story. There's more to come. And that's true. It's just that there's so much. Most of the people, not everybody watching NXT watches, not everybody watching Raw by any means watch NXT, but I would say most people watching NXT are probably watching Raw. And so that takes something away for them. It's not like these have two massively separate viewing bases. It just seems like timing could have been a little better on this. It would have been so easy for timing to be a little better on this and have him lose that match to Jeff Hardy 3 weeks from now after he's lost his championship to Samoa Joe or, you know, whenever that's going to be.
Yeah. And I think the little tag I'll put on the end of it is that what tonight left me wondering as he walked off with Regal on the ground and Joe chasing him with really nice lightning timing, by the way. It has been storming here all night, and like the thunder and lightning has been very dramatic. Like, just in casual family conversation, we'll say something and then the thunder will start and it'll make it seem like we planned it. And it's a post-produced dramatic moment in a movie. But it has me wondering if, cause I was already going into tonight, if wondering in the as unlikely as it was going to be. If Cross was just going to walk out, not say anything, lay the title down and leave. But now I'm wondering, are they not going to do a title match with him and whoever, him and Joe? I don't know if I should expect the title to be on the line with that, but I don't know why not? I guess the question mark of Joe's health that everyone talks about, but it really is, that's all it is, a question mark. But it's made me wonder if the storyline is going to end with Cross being stripped of the belt because he attacked Regal and is antagonizing Joe and whatnot. Because if you can do that and remain champion, I don't know. I guess it is wrestling.
There were 52 minutes of wrestling on this show among six matches, and we haven't talked about any of it, but we will. You can call us at 515-605-9. Oh, man, I haven't corpsed on the last part of this phone number in a long time. 9345. 515-605-9345. We are going to talk to our friend Darrell. Darrell, if you are there, I have just put you on, and hey.
How are you guys doing tonight in the two-man booth?
Two-man booth. We're used to it because we do 8 years back, and it's just the two of us hanging out anyway. So yeah, feeling pretty fine.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Interesting hearing you guys talk about what happened on Raw in the main event. If you don't mind, I have a few questions about other stuff on the show, but I do have a comment on what you guys were speaking on, if you don't mind. Again, and you know I always call into you guys, and I say that poison pill called a call-up. I hate when it's being asked about, spoken on, and acknowledged, because I feel like that's something that shouldn't even be acknowledged on anywhere, because it's like, I don't think you're being called up. I just think you're being moved over to the dying days of Vince McMahon and how he created things. Just even last night showing what you had to do, which probably caused them to make a change to show and play a card that I don't remember in a while or haven't since I've been watching NXT, them showing and what made Regal as like the best general manager on any show that they have ever had, because you never had anybody had to put his hands on him, because he's the ultimate authority figure where you respected him. Even if you was a bad guy, you respected him because of who he was. Now you play that card to just get a one-time heat for a guy who should be going up now and was ruined day one, just so you can heat up a feud that might not lead to anything and could depress your fans and hurt your business as a whole is tragic in my eyes. And we have seen them ruin a lot of people. I know you were saying Tyler Breeze and Bayley, who Bayley should have been in their woman, John Cena. But I can say they ruined Becky. If it wasn't for her switching to the man and then having that bloody face, that's the miracle they needed to make her get to rebear herself and become the star that they needed. From Sunday to last night, and even I know y'all was talking about Nikki Ash and loving the character, but that character ruined somebody who you could have had years with as a top woman star, and stealing her as middle card and going to be lost in the shuffle on her real Ripley. And it even do further damage to Charlotte, because people already sometimes get tired of her. So having a character that you might like and admire, but if that character's damaging to others, a la Fiend and stuff like that, that's not a good character. So I just hated that whole thing. I know I threw a lot, but before I ask my first question, what do you guys think about that side of the story?
It is a lot. And I don't watch Raw almost ever, and I didn't. I only checked out the Hardy Cross thing because I had to know if it was quite as bad as I had heard. And I will probably look at the Nikki match just because that's exciting to me. I just can't stand extremely frequent title changes, and the fact that Charlotte has had a lot of short title changes just to pump up a number, when it would be way more interesting to me if she had a long reign than a whole bunch of reigns, which to me is the shallowest of all quote unquote accomplishments. It drives me crazy when they're like, I've lost a championship 17 times. That's not cool to me. That's just calling out how often somebody loses. But I'm probably off the rail. We're all over the place today. Tom, what do you think?
So regarding, let me try to remember both points. Regarding, yeah, Regal being laid out as something they don't go to often, if ever, really. I mean, when was the last time it happened? Was it when Bray Wyatt did it 8 years back? Unless there's another time I'm forgetting about.
And he wasn't the GM then. He was
right.
Just an announcer. Yeah.
I guess it's the sort of thing like Brock taking the streak. So then with the long game being that he was eventually going to transfer that, the rub of taking the streak to rub is not really the term I want to use there, but like, you know, so he could transfer that streak to other people. So like in retrospect, I thought that Brock was the right guy to do it, even though in the moment I was like, what the hell, did that really just happen? What are they thinking? But in retrospect, Brock was able to work more often than Taker and spread that around and give it to Reigns and give it to McIntyre. And so those guys now have big wins. And so we're talking about a much less protracted thing here and a much less significant thing here. But I guess when you put it that way, Darrell, and that is a very, very good point, I think the goal is just to transfer that to, I guess, Joe, which sort of makes me think that, you know, to them, Joe's health is not a question mark, that this might not be a one-off. And then you've got Dunn and you've got Cole. And I think he's even had a little bit of a stare down with Gargano here and there. So they've already been teasing all this stuff. And because of that question mark, I don't really know how committed I can be to that. But it's one of those things where, like, yeah, Cross may be the one who it is that Heat is directly transferring to right now, but he's not the end game for that Heat and for that sense of how the crowd is supposed to feel about them. So, I knew I was getting, whichever point I started with, I was going to get wishy-washy on the second one. Something about Nikki and I did actually watch Raw. I mean, I guess trying to remember what your point was, Darrell, I think what I would say is that, like, have I been thrilled with the way the main roster have been booked over the past year and a half or so? Absolutely not. But at the same time, as much as I love Nikki Cross, and you know, she's never been one of my absolute favorites, but she's someone who I've repeatedly said that if post-Sanity they had actually put her on TV more regularly, I mean, it felt like she was on, like, every third taping, but she felt like someone who, if they had actually been consistent with her, she could have been Bayley's of popular, and I'm talking, like, you know, Bayley and NXT levels of popular. I feel like she had that potential. So I do see a lot of positives in Nikki Cross, and that's why I like how she's honing all of that in a very genuine way into this Nikki Ash presentation. And it's working for her. She's got the belt around her waist, at least for now. And hopefully long enough for them to at least sell a bunch of those masks at Halloween and over the course of however many live events. But I think what I would say is just that, yeah, she could have been a top wrestler in the division, but as I always say about these call-ups, and maybe it is a defeatist attitude or whatever, but even though there are the extreme examples like a Bayley and a Tyler Breeze where you wonder why the hell didn't they strike gold with Breeze and why did it take them so long to strike gold with Bayley, when you look across the board, you can't put everyone at a top spot, no matter how much we like them or how much they've shown in NXT. You just can't try to put everybody at the top. You have to have depth in your roster and introduce people that aren't like, in, you know, you have to have your Humberto Carrillos. And I think Nicky filled that role for a while, and that's fine.
Well, all right, Darrell, go ahead.
Okay. And no, it wasn't really about Nicky. It was about how that character, kind of using that character, destroyed like somebody like Rhea Ripley, who was already hanging on by thumbnails and stuff like that. And now you're going to have to find a miracle to probably rebuild her, like just like how Becky rebuild herself with a miracle, with the man promo, and then after that coming up with the bloody face and something like that. But other than
I got you. Yeah, it was Todd Martin on the VIP roundtable who said, like, these next couple of months are going to be very, very important for Rhea Ripley, and I could not agree more because, she won at WrestleMania. Yeah, she was the champion going into that match, and she was in the main event last night, but she feels like, you know, the monster of the month going up against Hulk Hogan, you know, however many, you know, 30 years ago. They're given the spotlight for a little while just so they can put over Charlotte in the end. But yeah, I, for as well as she does when she does well, if you take my meaning, with the wishy-washy character presentation, which I have not, to be fair, I have not been watching all of myself. But I've been listening to the analysis of it, and I tuned into Raw and Money in the Bank. Just seeming like Monster of the Month for Charlotte, I am worried about Rhea now, because obviously we all know she has a much, much higher ceiling. But, you know, ultimately, again, it's I don't want to cry foul too much, because maybe she has the longevity where a couple of years from now it'll be a distant memory and she'll be on top consistently, and maybe we'll eventually get to a point where we're sick of her the way we're sick of Charlotte.
All right, Darrell, have at it.
Okay, now I'm going to a segment. I'm really interested to see how they're going to continue to build the Escobar and Swerve feud continuously. I like that they played on to the past. I like that Swerve brought up how it took all them to stop him from beating Escobar. I also like the interactions between both. I like how both factions look serious and stuff like that. And as I see, the fans are taking into my mindset of Hit Row, and they're not a heel faction. They are a babyface faction. So I'm really appreciating that. I'm interested to see if they can continue to build this. I don't want to see them get in all different type of matchups. I don't mind to see them talk or come out and watch each other, and you have different them fighting different people and stuff until you build it up. Until I guess now they just announced in TakeOver, I guess it's going to be in the same arena. But other than that, I'm interested to see how it was, and I like everything. I like the interactions tonight and the seriousness of it. So what do you guys think about the Hit Row versus the Escobar faction tonight?
So Hit Row versus Legado del Fantasma, it continues to be some really good stuff. A good war of words here. Obviously Escobar doing the heavy lifting there for his squad. Joaquin Wild can kind of talk, and Raul Mendoza as a talker, well, he's a good wrestler. So Escobar is doing most of that. Hit Row has just got their four person. It's, you know, they're rapping when they're not even rapping. They have this rhythm that even when they're not doing a cipher, they're killing it out there with their rhythm. I just love everything about this act. I just love it so much. And I too am starting to see this as maybe a babyface act, which essentially Swerve got into by turning, because Swerve did turn heel, but it just seems like even though he did so, it was only to find this ultra edgy version of himself to which he could slide into this, into Hit Row. And it's just so rare to see baby faces with edge in today's WWE. almost hadn't struck me, but I think even if it's not totally pulled off yet, I think it might be the intent. Whether or not any of these people are baby faces, and I think in today's WWE, it's harder than ever to guess whether somebody's a baby face or not. I think that this feud is coming along in a very cool way. And Swerve has a genuine challenger on his hands, because we talked about how we thought that Escobar maybe was going to win that North American Championship once it was time to get it off of Bronson Reed. I thought that he might be that guy. But with Swerve getting as hot as he did, I can understand why they rushed to get that done, just because that act is so, so good. Today was, I suppose, technically a small step in it. But I just want to know where we're headed with this feud. We've got Swerve versus Escobar, but we could easily have a six-man feud here, and I wouldn't feel like it was just a wacky six-man. I would feel like it was a legit six-man feud. I'd even take a little bit of Survivor Series action for these guys. Tom?
Yeah, I agree, and I think that babyfaces with an edge is the intent, which is nice to see them not change who they are. I mean, granted, we haven't seen them wrestle since that revelation, which I think was pretty much more or less cemented tonight. That said, I've been to the point where I'm basically throwing cards up regarding how NXT is presenting heels and faces right now. It seems like the vast majority of the roster is heels, and they are, you know, either cheating in their matches or directly heeling on the audience. And it's just like, are they trying to do a Breaking Bad thing? You know, no, they can't possibly be, because they're still pulling, you know, wrestling tricks to try to do the heel or face thing, but then their alignment switches week to week. So what's going on? So I'm just throwing my hands up regarding a lot of it, but that did feel like the clear intent tonight. And it's cool to see baby faces that are, they're not changing their act from when they were heels. They're staying badass. And I presume that they're just not going to cheat to win their matches anymore, which I think we've only seen them do the one time, but that really did feel like an establishment of, okay, yep, this is what these guys are going to do to win. And I think our barometer for working is listening. It's going to be listening to the crowd to see how many people catch on and participate with not Nada when Top Dollar sets that up, when he says, who's hotter than Top Dollar? And you're supposed to say not Nada after it. If the crowd starts doing that with him, that'll be our indicator that it's working.
Indeed. And he is indeed hot dude, that Top Dollar. I really like him. So that was weird. Darrell, go ahead.
Okay. And I'm going to another type of babyface that I'm enjoying. He's entertaining. And last week he was entertaining in all the segments that they ran. And that's Cameron Grimes. I want to know how long, because it looked like they might not be going that long with this Butler thing, since they just announced that they're having a takeover SummerSlam weekend. I'm interested to see how this goes, because you can see it snapping, and I like, because he know how to turn it on and be serious. It's a comedy act, but he is serious, and I think he could be the second most over babyface on the show, behind Hit Row them as well. And these are two, Hit Row and Cameron Grimes are two things that NXT needs, and those are babyfaces that people believe they can get by. Yes, he's entertaining. Yes, he does silly stuff. But you can see the seriousness in him. You can see it tonight. You can start seeing the code that he stands for, and everything of the sort like that. I'm very interested in what they're doing with Cameron Grimes. Well, how did you guys like tonight? And also, I know people talked about LA Knight ring work, but since he's been at NXT, his ring work has been a little bit impeccable and not as bad as you would think. He's not as flashy as most, but he can carry it. He can go and give you a decent match. And decent to pretty good. Better yet, not even decent, but a pretty good to good match. So I'm even liking that with his work and the growth of him in this role, because I think both of them are going together as characters, and him as a heel act that you need as well, especially with his mic skill. What do you guys thought about that whole incident, that whole scene?
So even when these guys get like 5-6 minutes on a show, they're basically coming off as like the best thing on the show. So we set up earlier on in the night a Drake Maverick LA Knight match for tonight. We didn't know if Maverick would even see TV again. Like, honestly, I didn't know how they were going to work him back in. It doesn't seem like he's got an obvious place to go after they sabotaged one of the better babyface undercard tag teams that they had, like, ever. But they set this up with the scene with LA Knight forcing Cameron Grimes to carry all his luggage. Drake Maverick tried to help. Grimes told him that wasn't a good idea, that he should just let him do it. So we got that match, Maverick and Knight. This went 2:22. So the first match we finally talk about was the one that just went over 2 minutes. Maverick beats Knight. Knight essentially distracts himself by being so obsessed with Cameron Grimes doing his bidding that he essentially got himself beat, which is the best way for this to happen. It wasn't Grimes distracting him. It was Knight distracting himself and, of course, blaming Cameron Grimes. Certainly, we are not in the era where you can get 2 years of TV out of Virgil being a lackey for Ted DiBiase before his amazing turn at Royal Rumble, which is still one of my goosebumps moments in wrestling. But you can get at least some time out of this. I assume this will end at TakeOver if it even goes that long, another 4 weeks or whatever. But Grimes had to, in the end, he was tasked with punching Drake Maverick and finally went ahead and did it, but he felt horrible about doing it. And indeed, comedy act though this may be, they are still keeping it in a comedy context while also allowing him to have these moments that genuinely can move him up the card and make him a major, major player at the top of the card in NXT. I kind of can't believe how much finesse and how clean and how well done this whole storyline is. All of it. As far as LA Knight doing better work in the ring here than he did in NWA, absolutely true. NWA, he was working babyface, but he was stalling even more than now and doing so much, like essentially 95% of his act was crowd interaction, to the point where I just couldn't wait to see him get his ass kicked by a heel because it was so irritating. And I love the balance he's struck now, and he's taking things that could be a liability and making his work within him so well. They have married character to performer, and it's just incredible how well it's all coming off. So lest I gush anymore, Tom, you can do some.
Indeed, the performers are doing an incredible job on both sides of it, and I feel like the writing is actually quite good for this, and it is stunning to see how effective it is and how well thought out some of it is after so much of it, even still on paper, sounds like it should be really stupid. And a lot of it in the very recent past has in practice been very stupid, but ultimately it remained effective to the point where I even agree with you guys that filler segments, which should have been the dumbest thing ever, where we're just, you know, thanking our lucky stars that Cameron Grimes is as funny as he is, that they still had some entertainment value. They were actually brilliant in turning Cameron Grimes from being the Yosemite Sam he has been into being kind of like Daffy Duck in the episodes where Daffy Duck like goes into Porky's home and just sort of antagonizes Porky. And of course Grimes ends up being happy with this butler situation and finding some satisfaction in the outfit he has to wear and some of the work he has to do, and then finding ways to not get the work done and to still get one up on Knight. Of course he did. Of course it wasn't just going to be humiliating him, and they've woven it well. So this tonight was a what I felt was an excellent follow-up on it. It continued the cleverness, and they did the big stuff well, like Grimes coming out behind Knight during his entrance, as it appeared he was, well, as of course he was supposed to do per, you know, what Knight had instructed, but he's playing to the crowd behind Knight. So that's like a big thing. And then they do little things like blink and miss it. Grimes is trying to open the lower rope for Knight, and Knight's like, what the heck, man, open the middle rope for me. And I thought that was very funny. So the match itself, it was obvious. And I'm barreling right past that. I loved when Drake, of course, we're talking about two Drakes here, so I'm getting myself, when Maverick was offering to help Grimes with the bags, and it wasn't even Knight saying, no, he's got to carry him himself. Grimes was just like, nah, man, I got myself into a situation here. Like, Grimes is just like, no, I'm just going to do this. I lost the match, so I've got to do it. It's fine. It's very, very lovable, very winning. So the match, it was obvious this was going to be a Drake upset, and I figured it was just going to end there. And I agree that the roll-up was handled well in a way that fit into storyline. But the real brilliance of it was how the post-match towed the line so nicely between Grimes wanting to do the right thing and still ending up doing the wrong thing because he feels like he has to in his current situation. I was thinking it was just going to be Knight beating down. In the moment, I was thinking it was just going to be Knight beating down Maverick, and Drake beating down Drake, and Grimes not getting in the ring. And that would be disappointing. You want your babyface to feel like they're actually trying to do something about it, even though at the same time, you know, looking at it from the outside, it's like, well, he shouldn't do something yet because that's too soon. Don't pull the trigger on this yet, please. So they had that brilliant thing of Knight saying, all right, I'm holding him back. Now you've got to punch him. And Grimes doesn't want to do it after he's already pulled Knight away and said enough, enough. So they got both things. They achieved, they did it. I mean, this was very well balanced. And if they keep it up, the moment when Knight is holding back, whether it's still Drake Maverick or whether Atlas or whoever it ends up being, when he's holding back that person and Grimes hits Knight instead of the victim, that should be a big pop.
Yeah, and the post-match all proves that Drake Maverick was just as well cast as everyone, because as the plucky, likable, diminutive babyface, like there's nobody better for LA Knight to be just picking on in this situation. That's where you get so much of your value out of Drake Maverick. And I feel like there always should be a place where you can use that. Durrell, go ahead.
Okay. And going to the match's main event, Raquel Gonzalez versus Xia Li. Well, I guess we know Xia Li is leaving, but that nasty bump that she took at the end that caused a little delay before the finish. Oh man, whew, that was a tough one. I'm glad. I'm hoping that she's all right and with it. Well, she has to be all right if they them go ahead and finish it. But looking at that match and afterwards, I wonder who can they build up to take on Raquel Gonzalez, or will they not be having a women's title match at this takeover that they just announced today? And who could be y'all top two? I think it's a little bit too soon to bring her and Dakota Kai up since they haven't really been teasing it. It'll be interesting to see if they do, if they could do that, and how would the story play within these next 4 weeks. But who could be the one and two option for her in these next lines, since they seem like they're going somewhere else with another woman who had a match tonight? So what do you guys think?
So I do think it's going to be Dakota Kai. I thought that she was going to be the next big feud for a while, but I'm starting to think that's sooner than later. And the main line that I felt gave that away today is Raquel Gonzalez saying, because after I beat Xia Li, there's no one left. And Dakota Kai's whole anger, her seething anger, has been being stepped over and forgotten as people walk past her to get to Raquel Gonzalez. And so when Raquel said, I will have beaten everybody, that's when I was like, this is her opening. This is when she says it. It does feel soon. I mean, and NXT loves their absolutely rushed builds to takeovers, but it still does feel soon if they're going to actually rip apart these two and make this feud happen this quickly. I would love for this to be given time and to be handled just as well as the Knight Grimes feud. I get that that's asking a lot, but I just do want the world for Dakota, and I want her to win the championship in a way that's really cool. But I don't know who else it could be otherwise. Nobody, I hate to say it, but like, it doesn't matter if they're face or heel. They're not even thinking about that right now, as evidenced by the fact that they had Xia Li in this context. But I do think it's interesting to note that Xia Li all the way through this was the one who worked heel. She was kind of the cocky one. She was in control when they came back from break, which the heel always is in control when they come back from break. And it was Raquel who came back against like the harsh, like leaning offense of Xia, with some impact stuff. I mean, she purely worked babyface here, even though she wasn't doing babyface mannerisms necessarily. I really think Dakota might be next. I knew she'd be soon-ish, but I think she might be next. Tom?
I agree. Dakota's next. So there's that. And Raquel, I mean, Raquel's like the main reason why I'm throwing my hands up on the heel baby thing right now, because it's just every single week she seems to be cast differently. And, you know, yeah, working essentially baby in the match, but saying things like, I'm your champion. And then during the moment where the staff was checking on Xia at the end, and thankfully she was still approved to take the finish, you know, she was her mind was cast back to Rhea Ripley during that Tegan Knox injury, and Rhea did not break character, and she worked that so beautifully, and Raquel was still standing there antagonizing, going, get up, so verbally still heel, I think. Unless she was just doing a poor job of skewing baby as she will do against Dakota, I'm sure. But I really would like to highlight how much I absolutely loved this match. Yes, unfortunate that, you know, Xia at least when knocked out of her at worst. I mean, if it was that moment that they showed us, you know, maybe crack some ribs. I don't know. But they were talking about a hamstring right beforehand. It could have been, I have no idea, but absolutely loved this because it was weird that they booked this as the main event of the show on a 1 week tease for Xia Li, who we've said over and over and over again for multiple years, how much promise she's shown, even though none of her matches have really come together super well for her. I don't think she's ever put together. Well, I mean, Mae Young Classic was good against Mercedes and against Karen Q. But on NXT, she's never really put all the pieces together bell to bell in any one instance. And so for all the promise she's shown and for all the enthusiasm that she has backstage, I mean, it's the kind of thing where it's like, if I was running the company and I didn't feel like Xia was ready to be in the ring, I'd just want to keep her on staff backstage as a cheerleader for other people. She's wonderful in that regard. But that was one of the biggest takeaways, if not the biggest takeaway from the last PC Combine in 2019. So all of that is there on the network for you to go watch. But it just really seemed like a weird position to put her in this spot, especially against Raquel, who, for as well as she is mostly doing, she still is relatively inexperienced up against other past NXT women's champions and other people who Zaya could be wrestling instead. So I was honestly wondering if this was just going to be an angle. And it didn't seem, you know, when it got to the point where it felt like they should be making their entrances and LA Knight came out instead, I was like, man, this is totally just going to be an angle because they haven't even done the Samoa Joe thing yet. And Zaya put on by far her best match yet. Every single moment of it just felt so perfect and in a way that is far beyond anything that she's done before. I loved what these two were able to do together, especially Zaya's part of it. And Zaya met the occasion. It did not feel bigger than her, even though going into it, it absolutely felt bigger than her. So I was just blown away by what Zaya in particular, but both of these wrestlers were able to achieve here.
I do too. And I felt much the same way you did when LA Knight came out. And they had even teased this match, but it just felt like they had to make hay if they were going to get anywhere. I was really impressed by these two, and it seems like both of them had perhaps their best TV match or up there together. It just really – I like big versus small anyway, and sometimes it can be weird when the small one is the one working heel. But we had that. We had that a couple times tonight because we had Odyssey Jones and Andre Chase. But it really coalesced. I was loving every second of this too. And I just I hope Zaya's fine. And I hope that it was not stupidly unnecessary to have Raquel go through with her finisher when she could have just done like. I mean, I know you don't want Zaya to tap if she doesn't have to, but yeah, I don't know, pass her out.
I mean, thankfully, I mean, we will see. Maybe I'll feel stupid for saying this, but historically, the WWE medical staff has been very careful about that kind of thing. So I feel pretty confident that if she felt she could take it, then she could take it. We'll see. Maybe I'll regret speaking those words, but I don't think this is AEW with Matt Hardy.
Oh boy. Yeah. Oh boy. Not an AEW show. Okay. Darrell, go ahead with another one.
Okay. The first match on the card today, I like the little jump off start to it. Still trying to see where is it going. Kushida picked up the win. And things. It was decently wrestled. I still want them to give Diamond Mine a little bit more purpose. Have him come out there, cut a few more promos, and stuff like that. We know a little bit about him, but a little bit more. Love to see something from I forgot his name, but the other guy that's on the outside. Love to see more from him and what he's going to bring to the table. Other than that, the match was okay. They lost me a little bit, but interesting. Want to see where it goes. How did you guys like that match, and what did you see this evolving to?
The coach on the outside, his name is Hideki Suzuki, but I don't remember if they've named him on TV. I don't think that they have. So he's not a young man either. So he might just be the coach and not just nicknamed the coach. It seems odd to have 2 seconds like that when you could just have the one. But yes, his name is Hideki Suzuki. So this opened Kushida and Bobby Fish over Roderick Strong and Tyler Rust. Kushida taps Tyler Rust with the hoverboard lock. I like that people tap to the hoverboard lock quickly, not because they have to, because they can't do it anymore, but because they know that that they'll get their arm broke if they don't. I'm just a fan of that approach to the submission because I think you save more face that way. But anyway, yeah, Kushida gets the pin. It's, I don't know, I guess it's just weird booking. You've got a new faction that it seems is being booked strongly to this point, and the two top guys in the faction, the two that you're featuring in the ring, lose to a thrown together team of Kushida and Bobby Fish, who aren't, I mean, they're not going to keep teaming. This is odd. Further, more odd, are the fans who chanted, "We want Bobby," when Kushida, honestly, of these four, Bobby is like basically a creator wrestler compared to any one of these other three guys. But good for him for staying over when he was the one invisible guy in a four-man faction, and he's literally never won a singles match on NXT TV. But that's his situation. But Kushida and Fish over Strong and Rust. In about 18 minutes, they are getting way too comfortable with this idea of having the first bell of the show not on TV. So I'm guessing at times, which I hate to do because I love having times. But I'm weird like that, so not sure where this is going or why you do this, because I don't see a purpose for this. But it was a good match. It eventually they earned it. The crowd today started out really kind of sluggish, but I thought they kind of got them simply with the work in the ring. They didn't kick it up to a super high gear. But it was all, I mean, it was these four guys. It was clean. It was technical. And that was cool. Tom?
So with stuff like "We Want Bobby," I really just wonder, since this is all the same Full Sail people, you know, you can see their faces in the crowd styles and their body. It's all the same people. I just wonder if this is this crowd popping themselves, because there are certain wrestlers, and Bobby Fish is one of them, where the crowd just entertains themselves by razzing them, and now that he's a babyface, they want to cheer for him. I felt like that was what happened last week with Aaliyah. For years and years, it has been just sort of like an inside joke with the Full Sail crowd that you boo Aaliyah. Yes, she's playing a heel, so that's what she wants, but it's just, it's less booing Aaliyah and more like you're razzing each other, your buddies in the crowd, by trying to boo louder, because this is, you know, it's the Rocky Horror Picture Show throwing popcorn at the screen. This is the part where we do this. And there's one guy, and I won't say who specifically because a lot of people will know who I'm talking about. There's one guy who has just taken it upon himself. Again, this is years of this bit in the crowd going on. Of however many bits that they have, and they probably have new ones now that they've developed that I'm not privy to, but there's one guy who will loudly cheer for Aaliyah, and so then everybody will boo louder just to razz that guy. It has nothing to do with Aaliyah herself. It's just the crowd popping themselves. So then Aaliyah turns face by beating up Robert Stone, and it's literally years of payoff that don't really have much to do with Aaliyah. It's just sort of like the crowd has now been given kayfabe permission to react differently than the way they were before, and they think that's hilarious. So that's just my like pessimistic psychological reading of crowd reactions like that. But as for the match, yes, Diamond Mind is just like like my notes, all of my notes on Diamond Mind so far start with an LOL, because it's just, you introduce this new faction, and then it's like the front man is, you've got Malcolm, and he's still never allowed to talk. And you've got Roderick Strong, and his gimmick is he's a good wrestler. We know. Is it really? Roddy's your guy for this? And so what I really just have to tell myself is trying to flip my brain around and be optimistic about it. What I'm trying to tell myself is that there's actually a long game in play here, and that even though Roddy's the front man now, because he's the one with the built-in chip on his shoulder and whatnot, and he's the one they know they can rely on, and that the crowd recognizes, and ooh, he's different because he has a shorter haircut now or whatever. The long game is Tyler Rust. And so even though he's the one taking the falls now, this all of Diamond Mine is just a Tyler Rust vehicle. And so that is my optimistic framing of it, even if it means that I'm going to have to tag matches like this, which are just like, look at four guys in the ring that we know can wrestle well and watch them do that for 20 minutes without much real storytelling going on, which is what I'm here for.
Yeah, and then to top it all off, at the end, right before the commercial, Vic says, can Kushida and Bobby Fish get back into it against Diamond Man? I almost died, man.
I you know what? I forgot about that, but I totally heard that too.
And Vic is, I mean, you know, so much about his work is charming. So I get why this, but he's dumb. He just is. He messes up little things like this all the, like Panama City Sunrise, and maybe that's part of what they like about him.
He seems like the kid whose knees are knocking while he's doing a school presentation. That's always the vibe that I get from him.
Oh, Diamond Man, Diamond Man. It was tough not to just keep typing that in my recap after he did it. Okay. Well, Darrell, if you got one more, go ahead. Otherwise, we will get to some other stuff.
Just the last thing for me. The interview with Bronson Reed, and he was speaking on that match next week with Adam Cole. It was okay. Interesting in seeing that match next week. How do you think that turned out? And that's it for me. And y'all have a good rest of the show.
Thanks, as always, Darrell. Bronson Reed, glad that they gave him some sort of mission, some sort of match coming out of his high-profile loss, which was just shortly after his high-profile win. So that part is good. Too bad that we didn't get any kind of response or anything at all from Adam Cole here. On the other hand, if they want Bronson Reed to have any chance at being the babyface in this match, according to the Capitol Wrestling Center, it makes sense that that you don't even feature Adam Cole to get those cheers and undercut what you're trying to do with Bronson Reed. So I think Reed will eat this pin. I think right now he's in that spot where he's just lost a championship, so he can absorb a pin, it is thought. If he's going to lose, if ever there's a time to give back, it's right after a title loss and before you get your next push. It's just crazy how brief this last one was. But I don't know. I think that Bronson probably is an easy transition, if there is such a thing, to the main roster. I think he's one of these guys who's going to be higher on the card there than he was here rather than lower, like a lot of them are. And I mean, it's basketball, man. So you can be the best in NCAA and not be anywhere near the best prospect. Got that on the brain because I am watching a major celebration in the NBA right now. So, yeah. What do you think of this?
I mostly agree with you. No real further thoughts. I'm not sure how much more prominent Reed will be on the main roster than here. But yeah, he talked for a little while and that happened.
Sure did. Okay. Let's go to some matches. Your crossover main event, your crossover match, Kyle O'Reilly versus Austin Theory.
I was like, did cross go over?
Right. Kyle O'Reilly over Austin Theory in 14 minutes and 4 seconds. I couldn't remember the name of his move, so I wrote it down as the leg ouchers. So he won with the leg ouchers, did Kyle O'Reilly. That's the kind of thing that's going to get him away from cool Kyle, my man. Kyle continues to pay for the fact that he had the audacity to be against Adam Cole, even though Kyle is the babyface. And then the whole characterization they made of him is just not cool. It's anti-cool. This cool Kyle is just literally the absence of cool. It was so lame. And they're trying to get to a point where he can do a little bit of that sarcastic stuff, but just regain solidify the fact that this is going to be Mean Kyle in the ring. A very, very good thing. So even though it'll take some time for the crowd, clearly if you didn't get it from what happened in that match, in that moment where he beat down Austin Theory and just got into a different part of himself, then Wade Barrett helped to bring it home and said, wow, kiss Cool Kyle goodbye tonight. Just like literally explaining to us, okay, we get it. We know we screwed up with him. Say goodbye to Cool Kyle, please, because we're going a different way with this. Tom.
Yeah, and Beth Phoenix adding that, you know, he was thinking back to when Adam Cole injured his neck and tying it to that. So even though we didn't hear from Cole tonight, and I continue to like that they keep him off TV to make him feel special when he does show up for his side of it. Oh, even though we haven't heard from Cole, I like that Kyle and Cole still seem to be feuding with one another, but they're doing different stuff for a while. We're not just right back to hammering this same feud that just hasn't really, you know, it just hasn't really been doing it. So let them do some different things, but contextualize Kyle's match with Austin Theory as, you know, still having to do with Adam Cole. Adam Cole is still in his head. And yes, it's a good thing that they obviously do recognize what wasn't working about the character and segueing him back, you know, using a little bit of a storyline to try to, and him, you know, saying that he feels like he's lost his killer instinct, to segue him back to Undisputed Era Kyle, which doesn't mean heel. It just means we already liked you. You were already Cool Kyle. We were already calling you Cool Kyle before. And then Cool Kyle became the faux hawk jean jacket guy. I also wrote down that Wade Barrett, I thought it was funny that Wade Barrett in theory always reminds me of early John Cena. Like really early John Cena, even when he had like a brief little heel run in there that nobody remembers, like that early John Cena. So calling him prototypical, I doubt that it was intended to draw that correlation. But since that correlation was already in my head, I thought that was amusing.
All right. Let's go to just because I have to talk about the name JC Jane. Like it's it's silly enough already, but seriously, Lacey Lane loses her name so somebody else can become JC Jane. It's got to be a troll. It has to be a troll, because eventually we're going to have Caden Carter versus JC Jane, and everybody online who hasn't already figured it out is going to be like, wait a second, is this Lacey Lane versus JC Jane? It's honestly like little kid making fun of you by changing one letter in your name, and it's supposed to be an insult because they don't know how to do real insults. She loses to Frankie Monet in 3:19 with the Glam Slam, not called that, I don't believe. If they named it, I missed it. The story here, if Mandy Rose is ever a story, is Mandy Rose. But there's a lot of stories here because Jessica Maia, in a slightly new look, a tweaked look, is the second for Frankie Monet in this match. Robert Stone joins them about 30 seconds later, uninvited, obviously, but trying desperately to still be part of this story. Mandy Rose comes out, sits on the announce table like she's sunbathing, and she, I don't know, reacts to the match in ways that hard to decipher because can't act. But I don't know for sure what she's doing here, but this is a full-on call to NXT. I almost called it a call down just because that's the way they're treating it. She's fully in NXT, and from what I understand, this is technically a trade because Aaliyah is going to be full-time on Raw. So I don't know exactly how she fits in. I do know that it's going to be hard for me to engage with. Tom?
So now we just need Casey Catanzaro to change her name to Casey Kane, and we'll have a trio. The Mandy Rose, man, if you didn't say that Mandy Rose was there, I would have completely forgotten. I barely noticed that she was there at all. I'm not sure how many times the camera showed her, how much commentary talked about her. I'm not as down on it. Mandy Rose did some decent stuff on the house show loop that I saw. And I don't know, maybe I'm giving her a pass just because that last season of Tough Enough, she was my favorite because she was the one person savvy enough to actually work a character. They did the like American Idol style fan voting. And so just, you know, the doughy, you know, doughy, doe-eyed good guys ended up winning in the end. And they were, of course, washouts. But she was the one person that I was like, oh, she's actually really working something here. And of course, Sonya was a part of that season too. But, I've always sort of given Mandy a pass because of that, even though she hasn't done anything of note since then. I guess the highest she's risen is feuding with Sonya, which was pretty all right. And it cut off at the legs a little bit, unfortunately, due to extenuating circumstances. And then, the whole Otis storyline, which was sort of their own concoction. It was their own backstage rib on everyone. And I fell for it, even on this podcast, saying that they were an item. And then that made it to the air in a storyline. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just not super down on it because Mandy Rose is just, she's fine. I don't care. If she disappeared, I wouldn't notice, but she's fine. Frankie didn't look amazing in this match. I don't know if she's trying stuff that's too fancy for her, but that even feels weird to say because I've seen her work plenty of matches that just look great. So I don't know if she's trying to adapt to a WWE style or whatever it is, but you know, I'm not super worried. She's still fine. And it was just cool to see JC Jane on screen because one of the people that I actually recognized from the Battle Royal that they did when they were still in the empty Full Sail arena, empty Full Sail studio rather. I think that was the one where Candace won because she like kicked EO off the steps or something, but there were several local Central Florida wrestlers in that. And Avery Taylor was one of the ones that stood out to me more than the rest. And one of the ones who, when I looked her up, I saw that she actually had quite a resume on the indies. She's one of those people where it just seems like, you know, you can pick any Central Florida indie and there's a pretty good chance that she's held a title there. Just one of those, the straight male thing of liking her look and everything. So I just remembered her. So I was like, oh, hey, JC Jane. Okay. I know who that is. Sure. JC Jane. What other names did you write down on the first name and last name side of the list? And that's what they ended up with. But I think it's weird that Frankie Monet is just fine with Robert Stone being there. Obviously, there's going to be other stuff going on with Mandy Rose and whatnot. But yeah, it was weird that Frankie Monet like segued into seemingly being part of the Robert Stone brand rather than being the one who was going to take members from Robert Stone.
So yeah, Frankie Monet. I just hope that whatever Rose does here doesn't drag down. Now I want to call her Taya. Thanks a lot. Frank, when she is the one with all the upside here, I really hope that this doesn't define her to a spot where it's harder for her to recover. Okay. There was one other match that we haven't talked about. That is Odyssey Jones versus Andre Chase. Odyssey Jones, I saw his hype segment. There's been a lot of hype about him, so I was a little surprised that the hype segment was itself so straightforward, that he's a good guy who's going to show you what he can do in the ring, and that was basically it. If Andre got one, then it must have been when I was darting upstairs and downstairs from a bathroom break while I was doing the recap, so I assume he got one. I don't know. I thought Andre looked good in this match. I thought Odyssey did not. there was much was made about how agile and how impressive he is for a big man, which is, you know, which is every big man in 2021. But whatever, much was made of it. And it's just, it's unfortunate that I think it was a plancha that went awry when Andre was supposed to be caught by Odyssey. And that didn't happen. And they kind of just sort of crumbled, not in an overly dangerous way, but it certainly wasn't pretty. And then there was an imperfect body in the ring as well. So hopefully doesn't really, really hurt the psyche of Odyssey Jones as he goes forward, because I assume he is continuing to move on. Everybody seems to think that this is the guy to beat in the tournament. But the way I wrote it in the recap is, if every match is an audition, and you're just a for the next round, I feel like he didn't earn a deeper run in this tournament. It was too bad, because the breakout tournament is one of my favorite things, but it was a little messy, Tom.
They have not shown us brackets for this, have they?
I don't know if they've shown us the brackets.
Maybe they were online. That I also did not see.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
So not knowing what the brackets are, I still haven't swayed from Briggs over Carmelo in the final. And I'm just this is the part where I have to, since I wasn't on last week, just post obligatory praise for the many times renamed Duke Hudson. I've liked him for quite a while. And it's just baffling to me that they haven't done anything with him yet. So excellent performance last week. He won't win this thing, but he won't have to. Very happy he's finally on TV. Hope it's consistent. I was impressed with the man who I will have a hard time not calling Omari Palmer henceforth. I was impressed with Odyssey Jones here, because he was completely sight unseen to me. He had done a very little bit on the Coconut Loop before the pandemic, and I did not see any of it. I have not seen any tape of him at all in any sense. The only thing I've seen him do is do the trap deadlift, beat his record of 775 to hit the 800, which I love that they actually brought up on commentary. This man doesn't have too many great accomplishments that you can talk about in a legit sense. They can kayfabe some stuff for him. What was it? What football team did I find out he played for? Syracuse, I think. But yeah, I mean, again, you can go on the network and watch him just like he doesn't even break a sweat trap deadlifting 800 pounds. It's very impressive. Yeah, that doesn't necessarily translate to work in the ring, which is part of why I was like, man, like more than 2 years have gone by since that happened. What's going on with this guy? Is he not working out? Should they stop paying him and give his paycheck to somebody who has more promise? And they put him in the ring tonight, and I thought it was fine. And the specific moment you're talking about with the dive out of the ring, maybe it was just the camera angle, and I'd have to see it from a different angle. But I thought Chase was the one who was out of position. I thought Palmer was right where he needed to be, and then Chase missed his mark and didn't do the jump in a way that it was easy for Palmer to catch him. But that was just what I saw, and I just look at this kind of thing as a person who for years has been, you know, this very much relates to what we were talking about at the top of the show. If NXT is the development system for, you know, in a sense, you know, NXT, we're talking about the TV show and what, but overall the Performance Center, NXT, if it is the development system for WWE, Vince McMahon's WWE, it's really bizarre to me that they are developing wrestlers that don't translate to the product that Vince wants to put on. And that leads us to our Shinsuke Nakamuras and our Sami Zayns and these people that were just like, why did they not catch fire the way that we thought they were going to? It's because they're not training the people that Vince wants to work with. And I know I'm speaking to the type of product that a lot of people want to poo-poo, but that simply is the reality of the situation. He's the guy owning the company. He's the guy calling the shots for the most part still. So, yes, when he walks through the PC and looks at Odyssey Jones and goes, oh, my God, what a big bastard, I need him on my show, then, yeah, do something with him. Train that guy and you know, if it works out, if he puts the pieces together. You know, you need to be trying to build these people to actually be products that Vince wants to put on his show to have a successful development system. So I don't like the, oh, he's such an athletic big man thing either. You know, you can only have so many giants before you don't have any giants at all. And if every big man is athletic, then who cares? But that's what ends up on Raw and SmackDown. So hell yeah, invest in Omari Palmer if he's going to, you know, go out there sight unseen, first match on TV and put on something like that.
He could be fast-tracked. I mean, he could lose in this breakout tournament and then just go to Raw.
Yeah, that's honestly what I'm expecting.
Yeah. So you say you've got Briggs over Carmelo in the finals. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I'll give you $1 billion if that happens, because next week they face each other in the first round.
You know, when I thought of that like 2 weeks ago or whatever, I was like, watch that end up being the Swerve Grimes or the Kyrie Tessa of this. What did they do? Was it Tegan versus some? I forget what they did in the second Mae Young Classic.
Oh,
but there's
the
always
two,
that,
I would
like,
have remembered.
First round main event. That's like the big one that you can't believe that these guys are already facing off in the first round. Okay.
Yep. Or Gargano Ciampa and
yeah, that was first round.
Yep. CWC. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Okay. JB emails us. RIP. Cool, Kyle. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. I really like the character development we got today with Kyle O'Reilly. They seem to pivot away from the cool Kyle act that we've been complaining about since the UE initial breakup and the Cole Kyle feud began, and more violent and serious Kyle finally unleashed after his loss to Cole. I think this role is a much more natural fit for Kyle, and as Kelly mentioned last week, natural and genuine tends to generally be the better way to go as a wrestling character. Also, I loved what they did with Legado del Fantasma and the Mariachi musical, which was clearly a parody of Hit Row's Cypher from a few weeks ago. I think this has potential to be feud of the year across all wrestling if booked properly. As always, love the show and go VIP. Well, there is a lot of wrestling to be across all wrestling, but I think it's got the legs to be a good feud and a long feud if they feel like it, because they got enough pieces. And I feel that all six of those pieces bring something very, very interesting to the table. This email is from Kevin Cantani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. As the summer rolls along, I feel the quality of wrestling across promotions has been quite good in the last 3 to 5 weeks, and the reactions from the live crowds have matched that quality. I thought tonight's show was really good. I'm digging the feud between Legado and Hit Row. I loved what Odyssey had to show us, and I'll be interested to see what Austin Theory's walkout does to the way. That said, I have one macro and one micro question for you gents. A, what do you all think about the quality of wrestling in the last month or so? Macro. And B, which of the active storylines in NXT are you most excited about? Thanks as always, and go VIP. Office hours are now over. The Professor Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Yeah, I think quality of wrestling's been, I don't know. It does seem like it's been better. I will say that I never miss a main roster pay-per-view. And this was my favorite pay-per-view since, like, Great Balls of Fire, which is the best pay-per-view ever to have a terrible name. And it's, I don't think it's as terrible name as a lot of people, but I'm not surprised that it was one and done. Yeah, it was a really good show. I really, really liked it. And yes, having a crowd back and seeing that interaction probably gave me something that I've been missing and didn't realize how much I've been missing. But even that, I feel like a lot of things have been good. New Japan's been doing some really surprising feuds with like aging guys who don't even get to be in feuds most of the time anymore. They're trying some new things. They're continuing to be really adventurous over the last few months, and the shows have been, I won't say hit and miss, because they don't really – they have the in-ring talent to really never miss, but their stuff's been – it's been good. And that's mostly what I've had the time to watch. And NXT, indeed, is on a few-week hot streak here, and we have seen them peak and valley a lot, but I'm really digging – what's going on right now? So those two emails, Thomas.
We hit everything that JB hit on. I agree that this is a much better fit for Kyle. Again, this is what we already liked about Kyle, and they're just figuring out how to frame it in a babyface way in storyline. So hopefully it clicks the way that it ultimately clicks the way that it should have, if they had just kept him same character, just wrestling different people now, not part of the Undisputed Era. Austin Theory's walkout. Yeah, we skipped the part of the way storyline that we thought we were going to get with Johnny being, what was it, with Johnny being jealous of Candace's title. Yeah, we skipped that part. And so that's fine. I'm just happy that tonight's backstage segment seems to signal that we're actually moving forward. I'm not really excited about anything regarding the way, you know, with the exception of the individual talents of the respective performers, as a collective, I'd rather move on from it entirely. But at least we're getting a new chapter now, finally, after they seem to be treading water for a while. And I'm talking about a guy who was just wrestling for the top title, but it felt like treading water. Over the last month or so, I mean, nothing in recent memory, even going back further than that, has made me feel the way I felt about Xia versus Raquel tonight. But I mean, it's been fine. I mean, again, with the caveat that I have not been watching Raw and SmackDown very regularly, and I still, even with it being the first show back, SmackDown was just the furthest thing from my mind on Friday night until I saw a couple of tweets about it. So I didn't even tune in. I just caught some YouTube highlights later. I was doing stuff with my family and caught the back half of Money in the Bank, and then went back and watched the women's ladder match after the fact. And then I saw most of Raw. Unfortunately, I tuned in on a close-up of Jackson Riker's face, but somehow managed to stay on the channel and watch the rest of the show. And I don't know how consistent I'll be, because it's just such a commitment to something that the absence of the crowd is really not the problem that they've been having. But hopefully having the crowd back will, as we've seen so far this weekend, but of course they can't have shows like they have including Monday and Friday, you know, every single week. They've got to settle back down and pace things out. But, you know, they're obviously playing cards now that they didn't want to play before, because they were holding back due to the lack of a crowd. It's just that the constant rematches and the constant screwy finishes and so on and so forth, those are the issues with the main roster that finally had me just go, like, I've got better stuff to do with my time, man. It's not the absence of a crowd. So, fine, I guess. I didn't see anything that I hated. I mean, again, even watching Karrion Kross get pinned, I was just, you know, I said my piece on that, and I didn't hate it. The thing that I didn't like was that he just said his catchphrase after, and that doesn't mean anything. It has not been contextualized in any way. So that could have been better. But which of the active storylines in NXT am I most excited about? I guess by default, I just have to say whatever Zoe Stark's doing. Even though the show has been better over the past several weeks, and I didn't even mention how much I'm enjoying how they are framing the breakout tournament this year. It really does, even though several of the participants are people we've seen here and there on NXT in recent months, it really feels like when, and I know there was some stupid stuff that went along with this that I didn't catch. I got lucky that when I tuned into TNA doing the gut checks, when those were a thing, what I did see were the stuff that I saw was good, and I liked it. And it reminds me of that. It really feels like the starting point for a lot of wrestlers. And you know, last year's was good as well, and I might have my perception skewed, because did I see it all over the course of one taping, or was it probably spread over two tapings? And of course, so many of the wrestlers you're familiar with already. This one has a lot of wrestlers that is familiar with already, to varying degrees. So I'm just enjoying how it's all being framed so far. But I guess I usually my default answer is just whatever's going on with the women's title. I think right now I just have to say Zoe Stark, because she's really been impressing me consistently. I like the trajectory she's on. And even though the tag team championships are, you know, just an example of too many titles in a company that has too many titles, and it's really just an excuse to get more women on TV in the perennial to the top title situation that already existed in a slot on TV. So it's just a recontextualization of that. I'm digging the pairing of she and Io. I think that's working for me. I like that Zoe's getting the rub, and there's just something sort of intangible about the pairing to me that seems to work. It just like makes sense to me that the two of them would buddy up and fight on the same side of the ring. So I guess I'll go with that.
Yeah, I will go with, I suppose, Grimes and Knight, followed by Legato and Hit Row, though those could flip. Indeed, I feel the same way about that pairing, and felt that way when the pairing got together. I was like, why does this feel right to me? Like, I even questioned my own sanity in it. But yes, absolutely felt the same. And it feels right because Shirai can offer a lot to Stark in terms of believability and marketability, which are really the only thing she's missing, because she has got it. Okay, so I guess we didn't talk MSK going into Imperium, going into MSK. And we kind of hit on the way just then. I don't know that there's really anything more to say. I don't have anything on that if you don't, Tom.
I just think it's kind of funny, kind of silly, really, that even if we allow them believing that Imperium hacked into the feed with perfect comic timing to just, you know, perfectly cut off MSK explaining what their name means. Even if we believe that, we also then believe that Imperium edited and post-produced their video to make it seem like they're like sinister superheroes with dramatic close-ups and desaturating effects and everything. So, yeah, kind of silly.
Yes, indeed. That is how I felt. One of those things in wrestling, you just elect. We just agree not to think about it. All right, I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk, Spooky Milk, or SpookyMilk.games. Don't find me on Spooky Milk. I don't know if there's anything there. You can also listen to NXT 8 years back, which we two same idiots talk about every week. We talk about a wrestling show from 8 years back, and then we talk about movies from even further than that back, usually. Tom, what do you have to add to that?
All right, Diamond Man, I am at Tom Staup, and yes, listen to 8 years back, because not only is this is, you know what, if you haven't hopped on 8 years back yet, now is a great time to do it, because I feel like if it were me, and if I was just listening to someone else doing 8 years back, I would be like, Michael McGillicuddy, there's a reason I didn't watch the show when he was on. Now, like in our most recent show, where as a bonus, we're also talking about our favorite Holly Hunter movies, Charlotte debuted and wrestled Bayley. And Tyler Breeze showed up and teased that he's going to like debut his, you know, he didn't show us his face, but we get to see Tyler Breeze's face next week. So it's becoming a much more recognizable NXT to the arrival era, like the NXT arrival era, when I feel most people tuned into it and got on the roller coaster that really crested with the Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens stuff. So now's a good time to hop on. And this week, the episode we will be recording soon that is dropping on Saturday, we'll be talking about all of that, as well as our favorite slasher films, a topic that we've circled around several times, and now we're going to dig in.
All right, folks, with that, we are out of here, and normally I have an end, but we're just gonna peter out, I guess. See ya. I almost tried to think of one, and I was like, nah, it's funnier.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm not the only one who sometimes is just like, shit, I don't have a sign off.
Oh, I haven't actually ended the episode. Bonus profanity for the hard time listeners. Hardcore listeners. Good shit, folks. See ya.
Thank you for losing.